John Hunter, E1. Where were you born, please?
John, I was born Lower Shop, 11th of May, 1933.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Lowestoft?
Yes, up to the First World War. Then, of course, they closed all the schools, obviously. And they were full of soldiers and sailors.
Do you have any memories from the Second World War?
Yes, I can remember the German bombers coming over and going back, some on fire, some cracking on the stage. We were even machine guns at one time in Minden Road in Warsaw.
What exactly happened?
Yeah, a German aircraft was coming back over towards the sea, and it was that low you could see the gunner and the pilot. And they had his machine guns going, and they were breaking all the pen cars up on the roofs of the houses. And we were in the road, and we were all running different directions. And I can remember the library getting hit, full of sailors and rings. A lot of rings in there. That was a lot, I say it was. They were after the bridge and the gas works, but they never did get them.
What year do you think it was when that strafing incident occurred?
When the what occurred?
The strafing attack that scattered everybody.
Let's see, I suppose that was... Sure, to our dates now, what would have been about, what? 7 or 8?
So we're talking about 40, 41,
yeah.
Time of the Blitz. Did any V weapons come anywhere near Lowestoft?
Yeah, buzz bombs. Not the V2. What they call the doodle bug. There's several dropped around here. Some out in the fields, some up on what they used to call the church fields at Lowestoft. And all the aircraft guns up there. And along the dings, what they call the dings. What they call North Lowestoft is where the Deans were, and they were all soldiers down there. Churchfields, and also down on the Pegfield, what they used to call then the 16 acre, but it's all caravan camps now. They're all done up different now. But you can still see some of the old emplacements there, and blockhouses and gun emplacements are still visible just above the sand and in the cliffs where they had them. They had guns in the cliffs as well. Several airplanes dropped in the sea, and several American planes dropped. Two in Somerleyton. I could tell you another way story, but...
Please?
I don't know whether one should do, really. There used to be a tank training field in Somerleyton, and there's still a tank in the lake. It was a runaway, and as you know, a tank closes from the inside, doesn't it? And the tank is still there to this day, I think.
American or British?
British tank. One of the old Churchill's, I think.
Just got out of control.
Well, it's right in the middle of the lake now. Must have been evidently running downhill that went into the lake, because that's where it went.
How did that happen?
It was just per accidental, it was a runaway. Long time ago that was. I could never remember it happening, but I do know it's there, because as a young man, as I was getting up to 16, 17, I used to go fishing over there, and my mate was head gamekeeper. And we went swimming in the lake. And I dived off the boat and hit my head on something coming up. Anyway, after a while, when I stopped my head bleeding, and I had to go a lot of hospital, and I had a couple of stitches put in it, that's right. And the next day, we went back to see what I hit my head on. We got into the water and went a little bit into the water and looked down. you could see the gun barrel. I dived off the blue, and as they come out, I hit the gun barrel. I should imagine they've. I should imagine the bodies are still in there. I wouldn't have thought they could get them out.
Was there any question of your being evacuated in the war?
Yes, we did get evacuated. We went to I went to Derbyshire, but my grandmother wouldn't leave Minden Road where she lived, so my mother brought me back to Lowestoft, so she could look after my grandmother. My mother wouldn't leave me up there on my own, so I came back here. So what they say, all through the war, I never went to school. I had a lot of catching up when I went to school after the war.
About how long were you in Derbyshire for?
About three years, something like that.
Whereabouts was it?
We stayed at my aunt's. I had an aunt, Kathleen, there.
Whereabouts in Derbyshire was it?
Oh, I can't remember. That's so long ago now. Yeah.
Was the war a happy time for you or a miserable time?
It was a hard time. Because you couldn't get anything. There was nothing available. You never had no toys. You never had any sweets. As children, I mean, if you had an orange, you were lucky. There was a boat. There must have been a cargo boat destroyed in the North Sea somewhere. And I can remember the beach being littered with oranges. And because oranges are buoyant, they float, don't they? And the salt water never affected them. I can remember we all went down there full on our pockets and jumped us up with these oranges. We were eating oranges until we looked like oranges.
How old were you?
I can remember my father sending me home 4 coconuts from Africa. And what he'd done, he'd cleaned all the husk off them, painted them black, and put their name and address in white. Just tied them all together and put their name and address in white, and they had a stamp on them. And they got here. Yeah. Because they didn't look like coconuts. They were like little sort of bowling balls, but they were painted black. But they had the coconut was good inside, and so was the coconut. You have to remember that. My friend's father, he was a carpenter. He was a disabled person. And he used to make toys for the kids. He used to make wooden guns and scooters and bogies, four-wheel bogies. And I used to go kit-bagging. I had a four-wheel bogey, and I'd take my bogey down to the station. I'd wait for the train to come in, and sailors and soldiers had all come in. They'd dump the kit bags on my bogey, and I'd pull that bogey all the way up to St. Luke's, up at Pegfield. And I'd get a half a crown for that. This was a lot of money then. Well, yeah, it was about 6 kit bags. And then I'd wait at St. Luke's. Somebody wanted to go to the station, you know what I mean? On go the kit bags, down at the station, another half a crown. Next trip might be up to Roman Hill School where there were sailors or people coming back on trains. One time there, I got 4 cooks come down to the Sparrow's Nest. They put the kit bags on the trolley and when I pull it all the way up the Sparrow's Nest, that's uphill as well. All the way up to Sparrow's Nest, and he says, "We ain't got no money, son." I said, "Cool, golly, that's good, isn't it?" He said, "But you wait here, and we'll get you something out of the kitchen." And I went in the kitchen and come out with a big, big block of butter. Of course, you couldn't buy butter. It was all margarine then. You couldn't buy butter. And I took that home, and my mother cut it up and shared that with the neighbours. Mrs. Brown, next door, and Mrs. Wilson, no, William Wilson's mother, she has some. Yeah. But they were hard times. But they were different times, you know. all the government people then said, we want all the scrap iron to make bombs and shells and tanks. And we went round and pulled all railings off people's front gardens. And all the cemetery down at Cemetery Corner, I suppose there must be one, two, three, must have been 500 or 600 yards of 6 foot high steel cast iron railings all the way down round that Churchfield, round that cemetery. We pulled all that down.
Did you have permission to do
it? Yes, it was all done properly. RAP and police and everybody organised and where to take it to. We took out the big stacks, piles down on the quay, and it was all loaded on the train wagons. And it all went away and made tanks and guns.
Did you?
The house got hit. The people were moved out into another house. All the cast iron stoves, the old kitchen lines, they were all pulled out and they all went on the scrap heap. They built tanks.
Did you get paid for the scrap iron?
No, never got paid for that. Never got paid for that. That was something you did for Britain. But the kids loved it. They were all armed, they were all issued with a hacksaw and a hammer, you know, and they thought that was lovely. There wasn't, you couldn't get the labour to do it because the labour was all in the army, in the navy, and what men were working were doing services what couldn't stop, like train driving and road repair and stuff like that, you know, sea defences. So you couldn't stop them people. Yeah. We used to go in the mornings, if we were up early enough in the morning, we used to go out. And we used to go up to, it used to be Dungeness then, it's called Dungeness.
In Suffolk?
It's a long cycle ride from here, and it's right up the coast. And we used to sit on the hillsides there, we'd go down to the sea, or we'd go to another area this way a bit, where the cliffs were, and we'd sit on the top of the cliffs. And we'd watch the Spitfires and the Hurricanes. Dog fighting over the channel and attacking the German aircraft that were heading back to Germany. Yeah. We weren't supposed to, mind you. Mothers used to do the nuts. We used to go at night time when the siren went. There was a big communal shelter where all the families used to go down. And because this shelter had several entrances in and out. And we all used to go down, because all the children used to go play up one end. The shelter never used to get filled up because it was so big. And all the children used to go and play one end. And me and my mate Hookie, we used to sneak out and go watch all the gunfire and the aeroplanes and explosions. Goodness knows what. He's sitting there, or he's sticking out the top like this here, looking at that one. Never dreaming that one day we would be in amongst that somewhere else, in another country. That was weird, but their memories, I'm not saying they're good memories, but they were memories. But an awful lot of people got hurt. And thousands of sailors and soldiers, what were in this town, when I think about it now, we could go out at 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night and nobody would ever interfere with you. Children could roam the streets anywhere. My mother and myself, we used to live alone because my dad was in South Africa. He was a coxswain on a AC rescue launch. And we used to have the front door key on a piece of string. You'd put your hand in the letterbox, pull the key out to undo the door. Yeah. Often you should come home and the neighbour be in our house waiting for mother to come home. She says, I've been waiting for you, Thor. I've got the kettle on, I've just made a cup of tea. She lets herself in and wait. You can't do that now. But at different times. If some people want to tell the truth now, we're overpopulated. That is nitty-gritty, isn't it, really? We are overpopulated. If we think that the First World War and the Second World War, if we'd have never had them, all them millions of lads that went down would have all been breeding. Their children would have been breeding. Their children would have been breeding. We'd have been shoulder to shoulder. And 200 years ago, a squirrel could climb a tree in Suffolk and go from tree to Scotland. It takes a while up now, doesn't it? When you look around now, trees are disappearing hard and fast.
Now, were there any celebrations in Lowestoft for VE Day and VJ Day?
Yes, definitely. Cool. Big bonfires, cakes, and goodness knows where the people got the stuff from, but they make cakes and stuff like that, buns, fizzy pop. You couldn't buy lemonade and stuff like that, but they used to have a pirate of what you mixed up. And they used to make it fizzy as well. But they used to have mud slide in the streets, rows and rows of tables, music, flags and banners strung across from the light lampposts to the railings and telegraph poles, buntings everywhere.
Yeah. Was there much difference between VE Day and VJ Day?
Not really, no. It was just a party. Yeah, to us it was just a party, and it was a big celebration. I suppose the grown-ups appreciated it in a different way, but we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves.
What about the men coming back from the war?
I didn't see a lot of men coming back from the war. What happened? The town emptied all of a sudden. But when it was D-Day, all these thousands of men that we had in the schools and in the holiday camps and the places were all filled up with soldiers, and all the boats in the harbour, and little boats, big boats, tugs, everything just disappeared overnight. And the town just went, every day seemed like a Sunday for quite a while, because the German attacks slowed down. Once our men landed in Holland, in France, the attacks over here slowed down. And you never very, very rarely see a German airplane. You still got the buzz bombs and the V2s up in London, but we never got no V2s down here. You see the buzz bombs come over. Used to make a funny noise like an outboard engine. And you just went across and you just watched it and listened. And if the engine stopped, then you made sure you went for cover, you know. But while the engine was running, you know that was still going. That's going somewhere else. And it's still alive. It just crackled along. Very, very unstable engine, you know, hit and miss all the time. And all of a sudden, it would cut right out, and it just come down.
Did any hit the town?
None hit the town that I know of. Come close. Carlton got a couple out there, and the Churchfields. But I can't remember any doodlebugs hitting the town. Most of them went up to London.
Did you ever think the Germans might win the war?
You know what, that thought never crossed my mind at the time. It never crossed my mind at the time. Having known what I know now, the German army was a good army. What let them down was their leaders, wasn't it?
Now, coming on to the post-war period, how did you come into the army yourself?
Well, I was called up at the age of 18. I was working in a garage at the time. I could have got deferred, but I refused. And I said, no, I think I'll go into the army, or I'll go into service. And I went for an interview, and they said, well, you're being called up. What do you want to go into? And I said, well, I'd like to go into the Navy. Or I'd like to go into the Ordnance Corps, because I had an uncle in the Ordnance Corps who was a Sergeant Major. And he's dead now, bless him. And when I got on the call up papers, well, I went from medical, got past A1, and when I got on the call up papers, I was put into the infantry.
Which month was this?
Oh dear, oh dear.
On your 18th birthday?
Yeah, it was just before my 18th birthday, I got on the call up papers.
So this must be May 51.
I think it was May 9th or 10th I got the papers, and I joined the camp a little bit after that. Yeah, I started off at Northamptonshire, in a Northamptonshire regiment.
Whereabouts in Northampton?
Quebec Barracks.
Is that Northampton?
Yeah, but that's just outside Northampton, Quebec Barracks. If it's still there, it may not be there now, because they've done away with a lot of regiments now, haven't they?
Yes.
I moved from there.
Well, what happened to you at Quebec Barracks?
Oh, we do 6 weeks there. What they call basic training.
What was it like?
Rough. It was all polish. Polishing the floors. Cleaning the windows. Painting white stones down in the parade ground. Bulling your boots up. Blanco. And pressing and shaving your uniform to make it smooth, to make it comfortable.
How were you treated by the people in charge?
As men. They would not treat you as children or boys, they treated you as men. If you'd done something wrong, you got punished as a man. If you didn't do your kit properly and you refused to do it, then you got 7 days, Jenkins. If you've done something wrong and you can't do it, you two accepted your punishment and you went 7 days, Jenkins, cleaning potatoes and scrubbing out the canteen for 7 days.
Were you punished yourself?
I had 7 days at Northampton, yeah. I pinched a half pint of milk off a Sergeant Major's doorstep.
Why did you do that?
I think it was devilment more than anything. Me and my mate shared it. We drunk it between us. I took the rap for it. I picked it up. I'd done the 7 days.
Was it because you didn't like him?
No. He was, what did I say? He was a proper RSM, you know. Real loud voice on him. Shout right across the parade ground, you'd hear him. But he was a typical military man. Good man. To me, he was fair. I didn't have no grudge against him. Why he took the half point of all, I don't know, but there we are. I done 7 days Jenkins on a boat going to Hong Kong. But before that, we would come from Northamptonshire after our basic training to do our what they call continuation training. And this was jungle training. So they said to us, you're going to Malaya, because there was trouble in Malaya with the Maori, the communists at that time. So we done all jungle training.
Could I ask you again about the basic training, because we see sometimes on recent television programs how the National Service recruits were supposed to have been treated very badly, bullied and abused and that type of thing. Was there any of that?
No, we weren't bullied. We weren't bullied. We were stressed hard. I mean, they pushed you hard. I tell you where they push you hard. That's physical training. Physical trainers used to be really, what shall I say, like these guys you see on television, all muscle and full of energy, these gladiators. They're the same type of people. in their t-shirts and shorts, you know. And they could go to the end of the run to the end of the salt course and climb this rope about 25 feet up in the air, you know, hand over hand without stopping, and jump down the other side, and you're fresh out of Civvy Street, and they expected you to do it as well, you know, because you're about halfway up the rope and you slide all the way down again. And it took you nearly 6 weeks to master that. But they were trying to get you fit. But they were the only people that I didn't like in the army, the physical trainers. To me, they were, what shall I say, a nasty piece of work. I never come across a decent one. Never come across a nice bloke who would be, what shall I say, helpful in any way. You know.
Do you mean they were sadists? Huh? Do you mean they were sadists?
Yeah, they were virtually sadists. They had no sympathy for anybody, you know. I mean, we had one or two lads in with us. let's see, Albright was his name. And everybody called him Daisy Albright. Even the sergeant and the corporal and the second lieutenant. And said, where's Daisy? And Daisy used to walk in, and when he marched, his left hand went out with his left leg, and his right hand went out with his right leg, you know. And you try and march like that. And when he got in the middle of everybody trying to march, it put everybody out, and it was a complete shambles. So he pulled out of that. He couldn't do the assault course because he... When he ran, he ran like a girl. He might as well had one hand on his hip as he ran, you know. He couldn't climb, he couldn't crawl. He couldn't do nothing. He was a 9-pound note, he was, honestly. Everybody called him Daisy, my mate Danny Hickey. And top of that, Daisy used to come round and say, John, do you want any shirts ironed? Do you want your socks washed? And he'd do all that. He'd make your bed for you. It wasn't queer in any way. It was born that way. And he just couldn't do it. There was another one we had. Oh dear, you have to ask these others when you're interviewing about them. Hankins, that was his name. He was the scruffiest looking merchant you ever did see. And no matter what you did to him, you couldn't smart him up. Of course, we used to get all blamed for all this because they'd come in and Hankins would be in such a mess and his bed would be in such a turmoil that the barrack room would suffer for that one person, you see.
Was he dirty or just disorganised?
No, he was just disorganised. He just, I don't know, he was 4 pence short of a shilling or something like that, you know. We just had to do it.